Yo, what's up, guys? JB here. Today is July 10th, 2010, and I am here for a special edition roundtable discussion. This is with someone that we've had on one of these discussions a while ago, over a year ago, I believe, but has not done one recently, and has especially not done one from where we're sitting right now, which is in New York City. I think the last time Luke was in Vegas, he still lives in Vegas. So we're here with, I just mentioned it, Luke Dancy. Luke, hello.
Hello, hello.
What's up?
It is good to be in New York, man. I've never been here before, and it's quite an experience. Having a good time.
It's a little bit different than Vegas. Vegas is probably like simmering hot right now. New York is warm, but I think like warm in New York is like an average day in Vegas. It's not nearly as simmering.
Well, the thing I do like about New York is that it's a lot like one of my favorite things, double-sided tape. It's very sticky here.
Humidity, yeah. I lived in Vegas for a year, and you have zero humidity in Vegas, whereas New York, it's like 99% humidity, which means like if it was 1% more, you'd be swimming.
This is true.
Statistically, that's accurate. You guys, if you're a scientist, you can look that up, I swear. Anyways, we're here to talk about magic, not my knowledge of science or lack completely thereof.
Yes.
So we've called on questions from you guys to post in the forums. This could be on anything from Luke's creative process, his experience in magic, to his work as a consultant, most recently on Mind Freak and with Chris Angel. And so we're going to talk about a lot of subjects tonight. We're going to get to as many questions as we can. I'm going to try to pool what I think are the best questions in my subjective opinion. And we'll get started right now. I think a good question is the first question that came in. So it's a good thing to start off with. It's by King of Spades. His post number is number 2. And he's asking, what magicians do you see as a source of inspiration for your performances? So over the years, as you got started in magic, who were the icons that you refer to, that you learned from? Or who do you think influenced your style as to what it is today?
Well, I think, you know, like a lot of magicians, I got started out by watching magic on television. And it was, at the time, you know, in the early 90s, it was Copperfield that really inspired me to even want to get into magic at all. I saw his implosion special, which is actually shot in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is where I'm originally from. And after that, I pretty much just got inspired by a lot of different things in magic because I liked a lot of different areas of it. And it's hard to say exactly who or what inspired me, but there was a very close-knit group of guys that I used to session with once a year and also online. And there's a place I used to go to called The Second Deal. And we would have a convention every year in a different city. And those group of guys, we became really, really close with them. So, you know, other than that, you can learn something from everyone that you meet. And, you know, in magic, that's especially true because everyone thinks differently and has a different style. So I think it's a pretty vague answer, but that's pretty much the way it went for me.
So those are the influences, which is interesting. So you start off by seeing Copperfield on television.
Yes.
And now you work on, which is, what is the tagline? Is it is Mind Freak the longest running magic series?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think 90 countries, 100 million viewers. It's the number one.
And how many episodes?
We're getting right at 100. So, I mean, it's the longest running.
That's a lot. I mean, yeah. So if you think about that, which I guarantee a lot of people don't know that or realize that, especially in magic, I think magicians aren't, you know, I think you'd agree you're the first people that will watch every single episode of Mind Freak.
Yep.
But to the lay public, 100 episodes, over 100 episodes, I know at this point, that's a lot. So think about that, you know.
It's a lot of magic.
Yeah, what would you do to fill 100 episodes of magic with different things without recycling the same tricks? And that's an enormous task. So let's talk about Mind Freak for a second. And there's a question here by R. Zhang. It's post numbers 5, and just we won't go into it too much, but tell us the background. What's the story there? How did you get started working with Chris Angel? How did you get introduced to him, or what was the process that led to you being now is one of the lead consultants on the show?
Well, lead consultant, maybe just one of the guys. You know, consultant is just good enough. Basically, I was one of the best guys in magic that I should thank, and I'm sure to thank him a lot, is a guy named Tim Trano. He's one of the main guys over at Murphy's Magic. He's connected in the magic world quite a bit. And I was talking to Tim about some ideas and stuff. And Tim actually said out of the blue, Luke, you know, would you be interested in ever doing any work with Chris? And I said, well, you know, of course, I'd love to do something like that. And honestly, Chris called me the next day, and we had a powwow on the phone. We spoke a little more, and then he flew me out to Las Vegas, and the rest is history. He and I seemed to form a good relationship from the beginning, and that's what sparked the whole thing. I feel very blessed, you know, for the whole process, because this is what I love to do and what I'd love to continue to do. And I'm happy where I'm at right now. So that's the process, basically.
We'll get into what you actually do, because I think people are curious. What does Magic Consultant mean? What does that daily life consist of? But talking about Magic Consulting on TV, you know, a few moments ago we were at dinner with Dan White, who works on Theory 11, but also is the consultant for David Blaine. You're friends with everyone. Magic's a very small community. Mm. What would you say? There's a question here by Christopher T. It's post number 6. It says, how does one break into the field of magic consulting for TV? If that was a goal for someone, if their goal wasn't to be Chris Angel or David Blaine or David Copperfield, if they just wanted to be a mind, you know, mm-hmm. the mind behind the face, what advice would you give someone?
Well, I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a niche type of thing. And honestly, it's just about, it's like anything in life, really. If you're good at what you do, the right people will eventually find out about you and hear about you. It's really just a thing where if you just do your thing, you will get noticed. And I truly think that that's the way most things in life work, where if you're good at what you do, the right people will hear about you and the rest will take care of itself. Of course, there's a lot of hard work behind it. You know, if it's really what you want to do, try and be as creative as you can, come up with as much stuff as you can. And like I said, I mean, it's a very small community. And if what you do stands out, then the right people will come to you. It seems to be that way for me anyway.
No, I think that's perfect advice, because honestly, I've never heard once, you know, you didn't lobby to be Chris Angel's consultant. Dan White didn't lobby to be David Blaine's consultant. He just lived his life and created what he created and performed what he performed, and everything else fell into place. So it's not the type of thing where I think you'd agree Chris Angel's not always on the hunt for people emailing him saying, I want to be your consultant, right. Or David Copperfield for that matter, or David Blaine. It just, you know, they look for minds. Aussie Wynn, for example, and it just started with David Blaine several months ago, and they look for this type of talent, and when they spot it, they spot it. And
I mean, there's a lot of guys that try to get in, and sometimes Chris he's happy, you know. Sometimes it's like the old thing, you know, if something's not broken, why try to fix it? We've got a solid group of people around, and Chris has handpicked them, and I think, you know, he's happy with what he's got. But when either someone leaves and decides to pursue something else in life or whatever, Chris has a network that he goes through other people and whatever to find those people. And, you know, sometimes it's personal. Like, we had his first mentor come on this season to work with us, a guy named Scott Interante, based out of New York, which is where I'm at right now. And Scott is just a great mind, a great guy. And like I said, he's had a relationship with Chris for 20-something years. So sometimes it's just keeping those people that you've got close to you already, bringing them in too. But, you know, like I said, don't push for it. If it's really what you want, it should come to you. But just try to, you know, try to get yourself exposed for being creative and doing what you like, and the rest will take care of itself. Life works that way, you know?
So let's talk about the creative process, because that's what we're leading to here. The guy's name is Rick Allen. He's from North Carolina.
Oh, boy. All right, Rick Allen. Cool, man.
Post number 7, and he's asking specifically what is what we referenced. It's taken 9 years in development that we've been shooting this past weekend. But let's broaden the question a bit as well. So what's your creative history be? What was the first effect you created, and sure. How, you know, was the first thing you published? Was the first time you were published? How did you break into that scene and that kind of procedure?
Well, the very first release from me is something that a lot of guys don't know about, because it came out 10 years ago. It's a trick called Misprint, and I actually, at the time, I sold the rights to Elmwood Magic, and they still have that trick. And it's only like, it's $10, and it's like one of the cheapest things you can get, but it's one of the coolest things I think I've ever come up with. It's very pure, very innocent in the creation of it. Other than that, I just started submitting things to Magic Magazine and other places, just trying to get, I guess, noticed is the word. You want to feel like you have a place in the magic world. You don't want to just be lost in the mix. So I started, you know, submitting my work, and people started just to catch on. So, I mean, that's kind of, that was the process for that. But yeah, Misprint was the first thing I ever put out. So, yeah.
What was published after Misprint? What's your publication history?
Oh, God. I mean, I have a few things in Magic Magazine. I put some stuff in a very... I don't even know if they still run issues. Channel 1. You know, I've been around, but I haven't published a whole lot of stuff. But there was also some stuff I published a lot in a very small publication called Half-Baked, which was something that I loved. It was like a 3 or 4 year project that a guy named Ryan Peeling started that was like an e-magazine. It came in PDF form. It was like basically a bunch of guys writing down ideas, and we'd all work on our ideas, and it came out like every 3 months, so we would work on ideas and then publish them in the next issue, and it kind of bounced off of each other, and that's where some of my earlier stuff was published. And but other than that, just Magic Magazine here and there, and that's it, really.
We're jumping around like crazy, yes. But that's okay. You were great on topic. But my next question is completely not about that. So I'm not. This is not a follow-up question. This is just the next question in order of when they were submitted. This is by a guy named Goth, or Goth, Goth, Goth,
Goth,
Goth, or maybe it's silent H, Goth. Goth. In its post number 10, he's saying, do you have any trouble on your first performances when you were starting out due to shyness or nervousness? How did you get over that? I mean, right now, even with your work on Mind Freak, you guys have to approach... I mean, if you think about how many spectators you've performed for, or, you know, you guys have performed for collectively over the past 100 episodes, you're talking thousands of people, and a lot of this is close-up, so that's thousands of approaches. How did you get over nervousness, or have you gotten over nervousness approaching people and starting performances?
Beer.
Okay, liquid confidence.
I'm kidding. You know, honestly, it's just doing stuff and feeling comfortable with it. Sometimes, though, it's just repetition. You know, the more comfortable you are with the material that you're doing, the more comfortable you are just in general, because you already know what you're doing, and it's just time to focus on the spectators. You know, I used to perform in restaurants in Charlotte, and when I first started, yeah, of course, there's always that approach and anxiety, and because you got to first worry about, do these people like me? It's number two, do they want to watch me? And then number three, are they going to like what I do? It messes with your head. You can really psych yourself out, and honestly, it's just doing it over and over and doing stuff as much as you can. And I think if you just do that, you'll end up feeling, you know, getting really comfortable with yourself and your magic.
I think repetition is key. You know, when I was starting out, I used to perform a lot of birthday parties like everyone else does when I was really young. But I used to also do a restaurant gig, and that requires you to approach lots of people, all ages, young people, old people, attractive people, not attractive people. And after a while, you become not immune to it, but becomes less of less nerves. I think it's the only way to fix it. You can't mentally fix it. You have to fix it by way of performing and getting out there and you know, letting yourself get used to that environment. Just like kind of public speaking is the same thing. It's not something you can be taught really well or perfectly without just doing it.
No beer, just margaritas.
Absolutely. Let's see here. There's a question by Malibu Army, who has a hilarious avatar picture here. Malibu Army. I'm guessing he's in Malibu. Huh. Post number is 11. He has two questions here that I like that I'll ask you. The first one is completely separate from the second. The first one is, what type of magic are you the most attracted to, and what type of magic are you the least attractive to?
I have a thing for gimmicks. I have a very much of an affection for gimmicks. I like toys, like the magic toys that come out. I like gimmicks, fun gimmicks, very visual gimmicks. The stuff I don't like so much, gospel magic. Like, we went out the other night to a place called Ninja.
Ninja, which is an amazing restaurant in New York, recommended to us by Daniel Garcia, as well as Brian Brushwood. It's a place in New York City where they serve you dressed as ninjas underground in a cave.
It was very cool, and they had magicians there, also dressed as ninjas. And I think seeing them, not those guys in particular, just that style of magician reminds me of what I don't like, and it's those overly pushy guys that don't really give a crap what you say. They just want to do the trick. And so they run through their scripting and their patter, and it requires zero interaction. It's just them doing what they do. And we tried to talk to them during the routine, and you could clearly tell that they were thrown off. Like, they have this constant thing that they do. And that's the kind of crap that I don't like. It's these guys that are just doing it and have no interaction at all with spectators.
No, it's definitely, once you perform a lot, like if you do the same restaurant gig every night, the inclination is to become on autopilot.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to fight that and make it so you are actually performing for these people and not just people that happen to be sitting around a table and you're performing for the table, but not the people. Because there was times during, not to single the performer that we saw out, but, well, to single the performer we saw out, you know, we were talking to him throughout the routine. We weren't heckling him, but we were talking, interacting in a nice, friendly way. But those words were seen as interruptions to his script or lack thereof that was in his head. And, you know, I'm not saying he's a bad performer, but I'm saying he's a bad performer, but it's a thing you have to avoid is what I'm trying to say. You have to perform for the people that are in front of you and work on their experience and not just trying to get through your trick. Cause your trick is the, you know, that's just kind of like the storyboard to what you're doing, but everything else that leads around that is arguably just as important as the little thing you're doing with playing cards or something to the spectator. A separate question here, as a consultant for A&E's Mind Freak, what is the average day like? What is your routine? So what would be, I know every day is different. You're working on a television show, so every day is going to be a new adventure. You'll be in different cities, different locations, in the desert, in a casino. But what is an average day like? What would be, you know, your what could predictably happen tomorrow?
Like you said, it definitely varies. I won't go too much into the process, just out of respect for what we do. But honestly, it's just meet up with the camera team, generically go over what we're doing, and then shoot it. I mean, it's not glorious. It's not, you know, that's basically what it is. We just get everyone on track, on the same page, and we go from there. I mean, it's an interesting thing with that kind of stuff, because you have camera people that have never, some of them may have never shot magic before, and then you have nothing but magicians or magic guys, and it's a weird... it's a weird mixture, so you just need to make sure that you're on the same page, and that's all. I mean, I'm not going to go any more in depth about the whole process or anything, but I think that's what it is. An average day is just making sure that the camera people and the magic people are on the same page. So
yeah, I mean, that can be a very stressful process. I know, you know, I was in David Blaine's office the 48 hours before that last special aired, and they were still making last minute decisions creatively. Sure. And so this is a very stressful, heated process where you're trying to come up with the best end product for whatever airs on television. Yep. And that's the goal.
Yep.
WZ Enigma, he's in Ohio, and he is saying a question I think is on everyone's mind, not only in magic, but in the world. and he says, where did you come up with the term dancey mischief? Oh, because mischief. We hear you say that a lot.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of been like my little thing. Honestly, I don't know where it was born, but what I can tell you, it was the first time I remember it was from my buddy in Savannah, Georgia, a guy named Robert Moreland, who, I don't know, he just started dropping that on me. He's like, you know, Luke, what are you up to? I'm at a convention. Oh, man, hit him up with some of that dancey mischief, you know? And I always called his stuff the Moreland Funk. And for those of you that don't know, Robert Moreland is an insane close-up guy. But he's the guy that pretty much tagged the term dancey mischief, and I've just kind of, I ran with it from there. So you can thank him.
Two quick questions. Mitchell 609, this is his first post in the forum, so I wanted to give him the benefit of answering two questions he asked, which are very quick.
Okay.
And both questions I think are the same answer. He says, besides Chris Angel, what magician or magicians do you hang out with the most? His follow-up question, is there any other magicians you work with on Mind Freak? So who are the magicians you see in Vegas the most? Who are the ones that you associate with on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I don't hang out with a whole lot of people, you know, and I do enjoy working with Chris, and I have a lot of respect for what we do and our relationship. You know, there's a lot of guys in Vegas that do magic, but there's also a lot of people that shouldn't be there, and I just take myself out of the mix for the most part. I see Paul Vigil every now and then. He is a guy that's performing now over at the Mirage at a place called King Inc. He's doing close up there.
So it's a tattoo place,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen a magician work a tattoo, so I give him all the more credit for breaking into a venue that's not normally including magic.
It's a good fit. And, you know, before JB left, I saw JB here and there. And there's another guy in town. His name's Alex Geyser. He's a good close-up guy. I see Alex sometimes. Ben Seidman, I don't really see very much now because he's always traveling, performing. The other person that I really see when I'm working that's a magician is Joe Monti from the L.A. area. So I see Joe a lot. And, of course, Doug Malloy's around. So I see Doug. But, you know, I have a wife and a kid, and I've got a life, and it's hard to have magic time and family time. Sometimes you got to leave it the magic at the door from the job and spend time with the family. So
we work with a lot of guys on Theory 11, and everyone has a different answer to this. I want to see what your pulse is on it. Do you consider yourself more of a performer or more of a creator? Which one do you get more of a buzz from? I mean, I talk to guys like Ossie Wind, who constantly has a drive to to perform, and that's what he always talks about, is his next performance, his next thing. Do you consider yourself more of a creator or a performer, and which side do you think you have more passion for?
Creator, 100%. I absolutely love, I don't know, it's like the more ideas that I come up with, the more, I would say pleasure I get, but the more, I don't know, it's just like I love to create magic, and whether it's card stuff or weird stuff, or I just get a kick out of it. It's fun to me. And I, you know, performing was fun for me when I was doing it back in North Carolina. But the longer that I'm away from it and the more I'm just creating because it's my job and also just because I love it, the more I find that I'm, you know, a lot like Dan Hosh, I'm more of a creator than a performer. But if I have to perform, I'll do it. But I don't know. I like creating this stuff. It's fun.
Well, we got to wrap this up soon because this needs to be posted. So I'll take one or two more questions here. Okay. This is interesting. It's by Asher F. He's in Colorado. He says, if you could have created any existing effect, what would it have been? What effect would you sing? What was the last effect that you saw off top of your head that you like wanted to, you know, love and hate the creator because it was so cool and diabolical?
I really like this thing that came out called Ultra Sinis, or Sinis. I guess it's whatever your, you know, potato, potato. The thing with the nut in the bowl where you have the thing like unscrew itself when you're holding it. I played with that damn thing and I tried it on, and like I feel like James Bond when I wear it. I'm like, damn it, I wish I had thought of that. So that thing was really cool. So that was a cool one.
There's lots of stuff like that you see. And as soon as you see it, you kind of like, ah, damn it, I wish I could claim that.
And also Richard Sanders' thing, the Powerball 60, that taking that.
I saw that in your wallet. So you use it?
It's amazing. Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. That's the other thing I wish I'd come up with.
Very cool.
Go ahead.
So I'll leave this one final note here before we have to roll. Can you give us any clues without revealing what we've been filming this past weekend?
Love to. This is something that I, you know, a lot of different versions have come and gone, and it's the thing I can tell you is it's a very organic and situational piece of magic. And the really fun part is it's not a card trick, it's not a coin trick, and I can guarantee you would never guess what it is that we're using to make the magic happen. This is something that's just so out there that I'm so excited to have it be like my first like really non-card release, because it's so out there and different that, I mean, you've seen it. It's just, it's not normal. It's just...
And doesn't use cards. It's very practical effect. I can give them that. You barely have to carry around anything. You don't have to carry around a deck of cards. You don't have to carry around coins, nothing like that. It's ultra portable, and it's something that you can use whether you're at home or at a bar, at a restaurant, anything else like that. So very excited about it. Well, on that note, we have to get back to filming here.
Yes.
So we're gonna let you guys go, but I want to thank Luke for doing this, and thank you guys for submitting all your questions. It was very fun.
Yeah, thank you guys, and thank you, JB.
Peace out.